Are you working in research, trying to do the best science you can?
Are you a team leader, a research assistant, postdoc, PhD student, or any other type of scientist?
Are you looking for a place where you can sit, relax, and listen to inspiring people?
Well, we have good news for you. You've just found what you're looking for.
Hi everybody, my name is Renaud Pourpre.
And I am Jonathan Weitzman.
Welcome to the Lonely Pipette,
helping scientists
do better science. We are back. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm good. We're back.
We are Thursday evening and we are recording the introduction episode of the season three.
Which normally we do Tuesday and Monday. Okay.
So how are you, Jonathan?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be back. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's good to be back.
Me too. We didn't wait too long to... We did wait too long, you think?
We waited too long, but it's good to be back.
So to launch this season three, we are going to do a special episode, a little bit like we do usually. We do this kind of introduction, just talking about each other, asking each other questions. But this time it's going to happen a little bit differently. We met, last year, 1.5 years, a woman who wanted to help us with the Lonely Pipette.
Her? She was actually one of my students.
Exactly.
In the Magister de Genetique.
It's all good people from the Magister, right?
Yeah. Best students ever. As my hashtag. My hashtag is best students ever.
do you tweet it? Do you use it on Twitter?
Everywhere, yeah. Everywhere I can. Hashtag best students ever.
I love it. Her name is Clarissa Mujacic. She comes from Italy, and so she wanted to see if she can help us with the Lonely Pipette. And actually, we are pretty working well, the two of us, but we wanted to have a little bit help for the season three, not for the episodes especially, but for the communication of them. So this year, for the season three, we are going to launch the Lonely Pipette on Instagram. And she's going to be the one behind the account on Instagram.
But we're still going to be on Twitter X.
Yeah, sure. And Thread. I think I'm going to launch the account there too.
Yeah, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, as they say.
Yeah. Usually, Jonathan, we do the introduction episode asking each other questions. This time we were a little bit lazy. Because we asked Clarissa if she could ask us the question, so we can just be surprised by the question. We don't know the question. You haven't been spoiled, right?
Okay. No, like our guests, actually, it's very rare that the guests ask for the questions in advance. So, yeah.
So
this is all spontaneous.
Yeah, we play the same game together. Okay, so
let's go.
So let me play the first question she sent. And let's get into it.
Hello to everyone. So let me first introduce myself. I'm Clarissa, a former master's student who, don't know how, got caught in this. Actually, I felt so inspired and helped by these two amazing people, as well as their podcast, that I started collaborating. From here, the road was easy, then to propose an interview of them this time. After all, they always do it for everyone, but nobody does it for them. So here I am, making this interview, pretending not to be agitated, and taking over the Lonely Pipette Instagram account. I asked myself several times how I could have organized this interview, and it was not easy at all. Let's say that, in the end, I opted to do it in a simple way. First, by recording myself, staring at the sea, in a very quiet, maybe not so quiet, beautiful beach that would make me feel comfortable and enjoying this moment. Second, by asking you questions, as I would have asked you if we were talking alone in front of a coffee in some Parisian bar. So, let's get started. Although you certainly don't need an introduction, I want to ask you, how would you personally introduce yourself? And how about your partner? What would you highlight of him?
All right, that's the first question. You want me to start?
I definitely do.
So for the people that don't see the video, Jonathan was showing me like, let's, you go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. How would I personally introduce myself? Okay, I'm a science communicator, trying to be an innovator in science communication, trying to bring emotion at the center of science popularization. So I do videos and I'm trying to get also in front of the public. Really, I think the word here is putting the emotion at the center of the science communication. Because I believe that for too long we accepted to not use emotion in science communication. And I believe now neuroscience are telling us that we should. So this is how I would describe myself. And how about my partner? What I would highlight of you, Jonathan? Well, it's super simple. I'm really admiring your profile because of one thing. You do so many things at the same time and you happen to do them well. So definitely.
I was going to say it's just because I'm not good at anything.
is it an adjective for expert of nothing? Like doing a little bit of anything, expert of nothing?
We say in English, jack of all trades, master of none. I wish I could say I'm a science communicator. I'm a science communicator wannabe. But for my day job, I'm also a scientist, and I also spend most of my time helping scientists do better science. So I run a lab, and I teach in a master's program, and I do too many other things, too many, and I am now a fully fledged season 3. Science communicator. and what about my co-host? So I'm really glad to have a co-host. I don't think I would have kept it going if I'd done it by myself. So I'm really glad you're here. You're very talented and you're very brave, because most of us actually want to have a job with a salary, and science communication is not a job with a salary. And this is forcing you or encouraging you to innovate. And I think that's great. So I never know what you're up to. I know you're always busy, but I never know what you really do. But I also think if I inspired you, it is to do lots of things at the same time. So you're doing the podcast and we've done some workshops together, and you're doing some workshops by yourself, and you're doing all this really sophisticated video and science communication stuff. And then you do some stuff you don't tell me about.
Like, I'm going to public places to see how people do some civil disobedience. And I'm trying to see if science back up that. But that's really experimental nowadays.
And I don't know, maybe you have another podcast as well. Anyway, next question.
All right, next question.
Let's update everyone. What are you currently up to? Remember, we're all queer scientists here.
So, I listened to the introduction we gave for season 2 and for season 1, and I am still running the lab, trying to publish papers, trying to get grants, trying to recruit people to my lab. So I'm doing a lot of the things that I've been doing during season 1 and season 2. We have had papers published, and we have others that we're submitting, and we have funding, and I'm giving talks, workshops, and so I'm doing a lot of the same stuff, to be honest. Nothing really, really, really new.
But if you still do it, means that you do it well. I mean, you're still alive in the system, so.
I'm a survivor. Survivor is really important. So yeah, I've got used to the idea that I'm a survivor. For sure. But it can't change every year. I mean, I'm trying to run the lab and publish and fund and discover new things. So we're always changing projects in the lab, and there's always a lot of turnover. So since season two, I recruited a whole lot of new people, and they have their own personalities and their own, so it's a new group, and it's gelling completely differently, and that's really fun, actually. So
I really like what you said, because actually it should not change every year. It means that maybe it's going too fast for us to adapt or to do it well. I don't know. If I jump into the question with you, I guess I didn't listen back to season two introduction, but it's still the same, trying, like you said, being a survivor in science communication, trying to develop the project. The only thing is that is new is we are trying to grow like you. So we are trying to recruit people. And so to recruit people, we need to found a company, because until now we are just a bunch of independent creator building great stuff together. And this is an association that helps us to have the juridic structure to do everything. But now we need to move
the legal structure.
Yeah, the legal structure. Thank you. The legal structure that helps us to do everything. Now we need to move to the next step. So it's still the same thing, trying to do videos, trying to do events, to meet the people, and try to share science with all the publics, not only the one that are online.
So we should say that we are actually increasing our workshops. So we've done a few workshops since season two. So in season two, we sort of hinted that we would be doing them. Now we've done a few workshops in Paris and around the world, and we are available if you have a conference or a student event, you need a workshop, we can come and ask questions. That's what we do.
Yeah, and actually, few people asked us between the break at the end of the season two and this season. It's still ongoing. We're going to see when and where we can do that. So just contact us and we can do that. Should we move to the next question? Right.
And what plans do you have for the near future, which you may already be working on and you would like to share with us?
What plans we have for the future?
Plans. So plans. For the podcast or
well, I guess
for my real job. So in my real job, I'm trying to. I mean, obviously, that we have lots of ongoing projects, but I am trying to get back to doing more interdisciplinary work. So working with philosophers and people from different backgrounds, and I'm also keen to work more with artists. So, you know, I'm very interested in art science projects. So I've renewed my interest in that and reached out to several artists, and we're trying to work together. So that's fun. And those are sort of plans for the future, and trying to keep the lab and the funding and the trying to motivate the people and do the best science I can. Yeah. What about you?
Yay, for me, maybe let's say it out loud. I don't know. We'll see. 2024 will be the year I move from Paris. Not sure.
Oh, really?
Not sure. We'll just see. Well, it's.
Where are you going?
Well, I would love to go under the sun. I mean, in a place where there are
Costa Rica.
Yeah, why not? But I'm trying to give some, you know, messages to the woman that I share my life with.
Okay.
I don't know if that's possible, because we have both of us a lot of constraint. But why not? Why not? At least if there are more sun than in Paris, I will be happy. But
I didn't know that.
But we'll see. It's like, let's try and let's see if it fits for work, friends, family, you know, all of that. It's always in the balance. So
where did you grow up?
I grew up in the south of France, in a small town called Aubignosc. And so for
Aubignosc.
Those...
Aubignosc?
Yeah.
did I say that?
What? Yeah, Aubignosc.
Aubignosc?
Wow. Yeah, that's.
I don't think I've ever met anyone from Aubignosc.
Yeah, no. I mean, there is like 500.
There are only four of you.
There is 500 people there.
Minus one.
Minus one now. Well, they are making babies, so it's okay. but for those that don't know where it is, it's nearby. It's nearby the Alps. So everybody that can see the lavender field that you have on postcard from France, this is there.
Wow.
So yeah, and this is nearby Marseille. If it can help people with no notion of France geography, but. So, I would love to go back to a little bit of more warm weather. And, well, maybe the climate change will bring this to us in Paris. But let's not hope for that. Okay.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. That's a scoop.
Wait, that's a scoop. Well, I mean, let's try again. I'm not sure we are going to succeed. But let's share that it's a wish. And then let's see if we succeed to do it in season 4.
Okay. And just how do I spell Aubignusc?
Aubignusc is Aubignosc.
Okay, wow.
And this is near the Plateau de Valensole, where you have, you know, those huge fields filled with lavender. And, you know, all the old people that are getting married are going there to take pictures.
Okay, wow, cool.
Yeah, you should come visit. I'm sure my parents will love to have you there.
Wow.
And they have a room if you need.
Okay. Yeah, they have your room. They have your room while you're still there. Okay.
Okay. I think the next question are specifically for you, Jonathan. So I'm going to play it.
Jonathan, how are you? How's the lab life going? What are you working on that's worth sharing? And with your team, how is it going?
So how's the lab is going well. The lab is going well. We've recruited lots of new people. So that, as I said, the atmosphere has changed and it's fun. And people left and I miss them. We're still working on the two aspects that really interest me. So host parasite interactions. We have a paper that's about to come out doing a new drug screen that shows that the parasites suppress autophagy, which is a process for cleaning up cells from the inside. So the parasite suppresses that and the drug releases that and kills the parasite. It eats up the parasite. So that paper's out and we are about to do, we're doing single cell sequencing, which is a bit mysterious. And we're about to do a big CRISPR screen because that's what everyone does. And then the other aspect of the lab that is working on the role of lysine methylation, so these enzymes from epigenetics, what they do outside of the nucleus. So everyone's focused on the nucleus and we wanted to look outside the nucleus. And we're finding lots and lots of funky things, including a role in cytokinesis, so that's cell division. And that is under review. So that's going to be published this year, hopefully. And things are good in the
I remember a presentation you made last year in Milan. Through your storytelling, I started getting really involved in it, even though it was not my topic at all. Anyway, I remember I started not only listening, but I got it interesting and participating, something that I'm not used to do. You inspired me that day. I perceived your passion, what drives you. And even if you don't see it, trust me, your passion and care is making you a very good mentor. I remember you already talked about it, but maybe things have changed or we can just get a rehearse. Can you please tell us what's the secret behind a good research, but mostly behind a good and safe environment in the lab?
Well, you have a really tough question here.
So what makes a good project in the labs? Is that what's behind? So let's start with the let's start with the second one because I am very concerned that the lab is a comfortable environment, and this means working hard to get the right people and to make sure those people respect each other, and to make sure that everyone finds their place. I was just talking to a friend about this today. So the people in the lab, they're really, really different from each other. They're such an unusual group of people, And I see my role as helping each of them find their space so that they can do the best science that they can. And they all need support in very, very different ways. Some of them need more space. Some of them need more guidance. Some of them. So it's about that. It's about creating a space where people can be themselves. I think it's really important, and that they, from day one, that they realize that they, I always say, then you're not working for me, you're working for you. So they're working for themselves with the rest of the people. Clarissa asked, what have I done recently? So one thing I did is I was asked to give the Christmas lecture at the Institut Pasteur. And they said they wanted something out of the box. And I said, really, out of the box, I can do anything? They said, yeah, you can do anything. So I gave a talk that was similar to a talk that I once gave when I was also given the chance to do whatever I wanted, about a poem written by Lewis Carroll. So Lewis Carroll is the guy, he was a mathematician in England and in Oxford University. And he also wrote a book that everyone in the world knows, which is called Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And so Lewis Carroll, that's not his real name, but his pseudonym, his writing name was Lewis Carroll. And he wrote these books for kids. And he also wrote what's called nonsense poetry. So poetry sort of challenges meaning and challenges words and plays with words. And he wrote this magnificent poem, which is called The Hunting of the Snark. And before you ask, Renaud, what is a snark? What is a snark? So a snark is a mythical creature, so an animal that doesn't exist, okay? And The Hunting of the Snark is a poem about 10 people, 10 men actually, on a boat who are looking for a snark. And when I read this poem for the first time, which is quite recently actually, I was like, wow, this is like a metaphor for science, right? So the captain has this group of weird, weird people who have nothing in common except that they are all interested in looking for the snark. So the snark is like the scientific, this mythical scientific discovery. So that's what I do, is I just create an environment where everyone can contribute to look for the snark, which we may or may not find. So it's a poem I really recommend. So I went to the Institut Pasteur and I put on this hat and I had a bell because the captain is called the bellman. I rang my bell and I read the poem and they were like, well, that was about as out of the box as it could have been. So yeah, it was fun. So yeah. So Hunting of the Snark. Yeah. So so that's what I do, is I try to guide this boat. We don't know where we're going, but I want everyone to feel that they have a part to play. And how do you do that? You do that by... So I always say we don't like to do things that we know how to do. So we try to do something different all the time. So now I have a student doing single cell sequencing. So I know other people do this, but we do it on infected cells. So we're looking actually at two genomes at the same time and looking at the interaction between those two genomes. And then we're doing a CRISPR screen again looking at the interaction between the two species within this single cell. So I just want to encourage people to be curious. And I think Bob Weinberg said it the best in season one. He said, you've got to have a good question. You've got to. And I know when people came to Bob's lab, he just let them for weeks just look for a good question. Because once you get a good question that you're really excited about, then, and I always say, when you're looking for a lab, you have to hear what the lab works on and say, wow. And if there's no wow, keep looking until you get it, until someone tells you about the science and you say, wow. So you just have to be excited about what it is. However tiny, tiny, tiny the question is, right? No one really cares about the interaction between Talaria annulata and bovine leukocytes. It interests a few people in the world, but the few people in the world who are interested are really interested because it's a wow question. So... that's a long answer to the question.
No, that's great. That's great. I love this. I love this story.
Do you miss your time in the lab, Renaud?
Yeah, sometimes. Of course, I miss it a little bit. I guess I kind of compensated with the fact that in every project we do, we are interacted with researchers. So we always have reasons to go back to the lab, meet them there, see their tools, their questions, their knowledge, their discoveries. So I'm compensating it with the excitement of research in a way of... It's like doing a big review all the time, but I don't publish a paper, I just publish a video.
Yeah, but you also don't have any experiments that don't work.
Yeah, so actually about that, let's talk about one of the projects we released last year, a project called Méandre. In English, it would be Meanders or something like that. Yeah. And in this project, we managed to find how to perform experiments, actually. So not to perform experiments to prove something, but just to look for experiment in papers that we could reproduce during the filming, during the and just to be able not only to talk about the science behind the researchers, but also how they test it. So for us, it was just a fun way just to illustrate how they test it by showing to the people, if we take this experiment and we try to do it in this place, this is how we could do it. But of course, it's really biased. You know, this is not as controlled as a real experiment, but this is just to illustrate how a subject behaves during an experiment. And yeah, so if people want to see it, this is on YouTube. I think that there is an automatic translation because this is in French. I'm sorry for that. one day we will translate it. Or if we get into international distribution, maybe we can do a season two of this in English. Why not? But it's really fun because in a way, these projects, so it's about explaining how function the brain and how we study it. And we use let me say it again. We use urban exploration. So it's
urban.
Yeah. Okay. We use urban exploration to put our subject into a situation they don't expect, and then we use their reaction and emotion to explain what happened in the brain, how the brain function around four thematics. The memory, the fear of the dark, the behavior in front of the unknown, and the beliefs. I don't know how to say it. Not only religious, but just like, I believe that you're saying something true, or I believe that behind this door there is someone nice, or someone that wants to threaten me. So, well, anyway. Just to say that I kind of could reconnect in this way. Should we move to the next question?
Yeah.
Reno, now your turn to be tortured. With you, we can skip to the other side of this beautiful, even if sometimes hard, word. Communication. One word, big problems. I know everything here is pretty and interestingly new. And even if everyone is still trying to figure it out, we luckily have you that already went through a lot in here. I remember me starting becoming interested in it, but still full of questions and doubts. And even though you gave me most of the answers, what really shocked me was your capacity of getting excited about all of this and your plan of we can actually do it and try everything by simply annotating ideas. So now that I properly introduce you, can you tell us a bit more about what you do?
So actually, she got me right because I was starting to get excited by my own projects telling you it. So a little bit about what I do. This is it. Trying to create like projects, science communication projects that start with a documentary or a web series talking and trying to demystify one science. So we did the microscopic life with cell words. Then with Meander, we started to talk about neuroscience. And now we really want to get into ecology because it's, I mean, this is a really hot topic. But there is always the way the media and the documentary are always dealing with this is always about anxiety or about accusing. I'm not saying that they should not do it, but I believe that we could maybe connect with this thematic of ecology in another way. And to give you a hint, I'm really interested about One Health.
What prospect do you think this has? And how do you think it can change the world of science, research in the lab itself?
So, big question. So if I understand it right, it's how science communication could change the world of science, research? Wow, I don't know. well, the world of science, of course, I hope it could change it. I don't know how we should interact between research and science communicators. I know that the way we interact now, it's a really pleasant way, because I believe that researchers want to communicate their science, and we should help them doing this, like helping them do better science. and you know, in France, I believe, for the vision that I have in France, we put a lot of weight on the shoulder of researcher about communicating science, while they have all those missions about managing a lab, finding the money to run the lab, writing grants and papers, sometimes getting into policy. And the thing I see the future of the world of science, research, laboratory, and science communication is a synergy where we, as independent creators and close to research, we can just bring all the competencies, all the knowledge we have to just accelerate the science, the communication of science from a lab. So I have a few examples about that, if this is not really clear. It's like the two last projects we did is like, it's a research lab or a LabX or an institute that contacted us. And they say, we have a topic and we want to share it. We have to share it. We have to let people know that this is important. And so they came to us asking us, can we do something together? And I think this was one of the best way to collaborate, because we have the knowledge to how to create a story about the science, but they have the deep and profound knowledge about the science itself. So we can have, we can go fast at creating a story around a deep knowledge together. And I believe that collaborating like that, we don't take too much time in laboratories and researcher, and what we deliver at the end is a product of the laboratory. I mean, the documentary or the video is based on their story. So this is their content. So at the end, if it helps them to be more visible or ask more money because they participated to this, let's keep doing videos together or content together. Voila.
Cool.
Let's get back to both so that you can continue sharing the stage. Now, let's get more into the suggestion part. What advice would you give to newcomers to this world, perhaps even knowing the question we ask ourselves?
I think it's really important to go to places where, first of all, whether you feel that you'll be able to grow. So I, you know, what Clarissa said before about having a healthy environment, that's really important. And places where you'll be mentored, where you'll get, where you can look up to the people around you. They don't have to be the head of institute or the head of the lab, but people who will take the time to guide you and to teach you and to share with you. So I really do think the mentoring and the people around you is, I think, it's really, really key and really important. I didn't have that. No, take that out. I I did have people in my career who were really helpful mentors and helped me survive and helped me navigate. They weren't always my supervisors, but people around me. And you have to be very, very flexible it's very unlike other jobs in that you really don't know where it's going to take you. And you have to just go with the flow. You have to go with the flow. And I think I see students come into the lab, we give them a project and they say, that's my project. And they think they're going to do what we said they're going to do. And that's not the way it works. Sometimes you do it and sometimes you do something else. And you have to go with the flow. And that means being comfortable. I said to someone this week, it means being comfortable, not being in your comfort zone. So, and that's hard to do when you're young and you're just starting out and you're ambitious. And so, you want to be somewhere where you'll learn to be comfortable, not being in your comfort zone. So.
And I love that. I love that. Well, we should do more episodes like that, definitely.
Yeah. We should forget having guests and just do us.
Why do we bother?
Why do we have all these guests getting in the way? We could just do this by ourselves.
No, I just love it.
No one would come to listen to us.
Maybe it's because you are one of my first mentors, so I just like love to listen what you have to say about a question.
You are doing a really good job of being comfortable stepping out of your comfort zone. You're doing that really well because you're trying to innovate. You're trying to do things that you don't know how to do, and still keeping a balance and not freaking out. You're doing a really good job of that. So. Yeah.
Thank you. And about that, so I will complete the question saying that I believe that it's because, as you said, I succeeded, or I am lucky enough to be now in an environment to be pushed like that. So of course, and I thank you for that, when you said I was brave of stepping out and trying this, I have to say that I'm independent, but I'm working with other creators, and either there is always one of us trying to put the rest of the group outside the comfort zone. And this is why I love so much doing this job now. It's because if I was alone, I'm sure it would be less exciting. But because I'm doing it with them, and they have definitely skills that I don't have, when we discuss and when we think about projects, there is always this, you know, room where we are completely in our comfort zone. And during discussion, there is one, either I or someone else, that just step outside and then bring all the other people with him there. And because we are several people, it's less frightening. One thing I could say about that, it's interesting because I tried to see if there were documentation about that, but we talk about co-mentoring before, you and I, and also during the episodes, I think. But I think this is what I'm experimenting here with them. It's we feel that we are not more advanced to each other, but by creating together, there is always one or the other that just step outside, and so we co-mentor each other like that. Like, hey, you should see that.
So I have a friend who's just written a book about collective intelligence. This idea that bringing people together can create something new, something epigenetically new. I mean, something that takes on a new form by the interaction between the participants. So I think that there's a real science behind that, and I think that's how biological systems work. They bring together components and cells, and they create collective intelligence. So yeah, I really like the word that you used, creator. I'm a creator. So in the States they sometimes use this word creatives, meaning people who create. I think that's a great title. We should forget science communicator, scientists, who just say I'm a creator. Or a creative, yeah.
That's interesting because I was forced a little bit to use that, because when people ask me, what do you do? I say, yeah, I do videos, but I'm also, you know, last year I founded the Festival of Science, and I'm also doing some events where I share science. So it's just like, I'm not just a video creator or a podcaster. It's just I need to be all of that for an economic reason. It's because the video is not enough for me to live. But it's a good way to keep being creative.
In more than one of my experiences, I appreciated how tutors and in general laboratory seniors wanted me to do things in the right and proper way, since they had already been there and struggled before. Consider the approach of making newcomers to this world, avoid the avoidable. Is there anything you would have changed that you absolutely suggest to young people because you have already paid it on your skin?
I'm not a big believer in this idea that someone who's done it before should tell you how things have to be done. I think people have to make mistakes by themselves. So I made mistakes, but it's not, I don't want to say what they are so that you won't make them. It's just, I think everyone has to make mistakes and has to do things and go back and forward and change. So, we asked this question ourselves, but if I hadn't made the mistakes I'd made, I wouldn't be who I am. So I don't know whether I haven't made any right, really shit big mistakes, but all the little mistakes, I think people have to make them themselves. I don't want to tell people how to run their lives or their labs or their, I can give advice, but not tell people don't do that or don't do that.
It's a tough question because also I think I never done big thing that I should avoid because I believe that I learned every time from it. Maybe the question comes down to you know what they call micromanagement or stuff like that, where people really want you to not do that way because they know that if you do that way, it's not good. But there are so many parameters that at least in the I don't know about the lab, but at least in the creative way or in the science communication way, I believe that every time that I see someone that press someone else to do in one way and not another, you suppress a little bit the bit of originality that the other people can come with. And I think asking questions in science is a bit the same. If you always lead your students or your coworkers with the same way of thinking, they will always ask the same question. So maybe, like you said before, they are not going to find the right or really exciting question for them.
Another more introspective question. Is there anything you would suggest to the young and less confident you?
I was shy. I think I'm still a bit shy, but I recently came out of a class. And, you know, sometimes when you give a good class, people come up to you at the end and ask questions. And there was one person sort of hovering, waiting till everyone had left. And then when anyone left, I said, yeah, do you have a question? He said, yeah. He said, were you always like this? So no, I mean, you know, everyone gets more confident. As you grow older, you become more confident and you become more at ease with who you are. You just, because you have to, right? When you're young, you're always self-conscious. But you can't say to someone, don't be self-conscious. I mean, that's just when you get older, you just care less. And I look at old people who really don't care about anything. And I'm like, wow, this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to old age where I can just be me and just not care. So I think self-consciousness is something. I was very self-conscious and I was worried what people think of me and whether I'm good enough. I still worry what people think of me and what I'm good enough, but a little less than before. You can't look at a leader or a head of a lab and say, wow, you know, they must have always been like that. What we've tried to show with all our guests is that they have very modest beginnings and they slowly became head of a lab and then head of an institute and head of a... They weren't born head of the EMBL or editor of Nature. They're things that they slowly grew into and they became more and more confident that they could do it. And so I've been like...
I think that I have the chance to. I think when I was younger, I don't think I am too old. I think I was not really less confident. I think I'm more confident now than before, of course. But I think that there is one advice I always give in teaching when I'm doing science communication in front of the camera, because a camera can be a little bit overwhelming and or a bit too much for people, and they lose a little bit their means. I believe that what I would have suggested to your younger, less confident me is every time that I tried something new that I was not confident with, when I exposed it to the public, right after that, I was feeling more confident. It's just like I was feeling that because I was anticipating, I was really too afraid. But once you've done it one time in front of the public, or when you kind of release this pressure, because now it's done, you're exposed. So
yeah, I mean, we all have a lot of fear, but so one of the podcasters I listen to, he's always like, "What is the worst that could happen?"
Yeah, exactly.
and when you face that question, sometimes you realize actually it's not so. I don't know why I'm scared. So
Yeah, it's exactly the same, this process. It's so when it comes into practice, when I'm in a class, I ask the students to do what we call the booster clap. That is a movement where you shake your body, you clap your hand, and you scream really out loud in front of the people in the room. And you look so stupid that after that, you don't feel stupid anymore.
That's why we're doing this podcast.
Yeah, but I believe it could help.
I'm not scared of anything anymore.
Yeah, I think it has helped me too to be like more confident. Like let's just share it on a mic. Let's get it out there and let's.
I meet people all the time. They're that. Oh, you're that idiot that does the podcast. And that's me. That's me.
We are two of us. We are two of them.
And now, one important thing, what do you want to do next?
What do you want to do next? Season 3?
Obviously, we want to get it.
That's out. What I want to do most is season 3.
Well, no, there is something else we want to do, Jonathan.
Yeah,
let's say it. We want to do an episode during an event. We want to be there in an event,
yeah,
a symposium.
Yeah, we want to do a lot. Yeah. So I sort of did one this week. We had this fly ceremony and we sort of did an open mic thing. But yeah, we want to do a live. This is good. Let's send out the bait. See if someone bites. So there are things we want to do. I'm still working on a book idea. We're still working on some gaming ideas, but we want to do a live The Lonely Pipette event. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
please, just when you do your next symposium, conference or whatever, let's go.
But we do have to solve the audio problem.
Yeah, but for events, actually, I have few ideas about how we can do that.
Of course, I couldn't forget the ritual question. Is there a personal routine of yours, more or less frequent, that you would like to share with us?
Should I start? Should you start?
You should start. I know this is the question I love to ask, but anyway, yeah. Go for it.
Wow. A personal routine, more or less frequent. Okay, I can share one that I'm doing right now. Actually, I started in 2024 a routine. I started well in January and February. In March, it's like I need to get back to it. I'm trying every morning to write a small fiction, like 500 to 1,000 characters fiction. But I have one constraint. The constraint is to put one nugget of knowledge inside there. So it's a kind of small fiction narrative where I try to...
It's the same story every day or a new story every day?
No, it's a new story every day. It's just like I'm just trying to pick two constraints, like what is the knowledge that I want to share and what is the small setup like someone on a boat or someone in a coffee shop after the end of the world, something like that. And with just these two information, I'm trying to build a small narrative and sharing the knowledge. It's really tough. It's really, really tough. But I'm trying to spend like half an hour, I think, every morning trying to do that. I start to feel that I'm starting to get faster, but I'm not sure the quality is better. Maybe one day I will share it.
Cool.
I like that.
So, so it's there is a morning routine called morning pages. It's just this idea that you write 500 to 1,000 words, just write every morning and not worry too much about the structure. And it, you're not writing for anyone else, you're just writing. I don't do that, like, but I do write, I try to do it every day. I write three things that I'm grateful for. So like a gratitude practice. So I try to write three things that I'm grateful for. And you can't write the same thing every day. So I try and find three new things. And I was actually talking about this to someone this week. And the idea that when you look for, I mean, gratitude is, I think, is so important, to be grateful and to learn to be grateful. And when you force yourself to write down three things that you're grateful for every day, you have to look for things. And sometimes they're big things and sometimes they're just tiny, tiny things. So So gratitude practice. Well, I think it helps me to look at things and be grateful and put things in perspective. I do have a little secret project that one day I'm going to turn them into a poem, just a poem full of these like things that I was grateful for. They're often really, really petty little things, but just I'm just looking back. I write them in my red book. I think it's really important to be able to feel grateful. So definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of research that's saying how important for mental health and well-being, how it is to have a gratitude practice. So it's, I didn't make it up. It's and many cultures and many religions have that. But I'm trying to do it. I don't manage every day, but I am trying. There we go.
To end, leave us like this. What reflection would you like to share? What would you suggest to the new generations now, consider what happened to you before and considering how things have changed?
That's a tough question.
I don't know. I
prefer to ask the question than being
exactly.
asked.
Exactly. The whole reason to have the podcast was that you didn't have to give out advice. You could just ask other people to give advice. I do want to add something, though. I mean, being grateful, I am grateful. I'm grateful that we have the chance to do the podcast and we have all these amazing guests. But I am grateful just that I get the chance to do this job. And I managed to do it in a place where I have fantastic colleagues and we have funding and we managed to publish and we have great, great students and we do this in peacetime. So in the introduction to episode two, I'd mentioned that I had a student from Ukraine and how difficult it was to see someone going through their family at war. And I'm very glad that we haven't actually been broadcasting over the last few months, because it's been a very difficult time for the world, because there's another part of the world that's at war again. Just as an anecdote, so in the first season, we had Oded Rechavi, fantastic guest, and just a fantastic scientist and innovator and creator, as you said. And I've never met him, actually. We had this podcast and we've communicated on Twitter, X. And anyway, he said, and every time he's in Paris, he said, let's get together. And it's never worked. Anyway, he said he's in Paris. And I said, great, let's. So we had breakfast together on the 6th of October. And the next day, this terrible thing happened in Israel. And he was stranded, actually, here for several days. And it's been a very difficult time for Israelis
and for Palestinians. I have Israeli students and I have students from Palestine. And it's been very painful to watch their families at war and watch people destroy each other's cultures and people going to war. So I'm glad we didn't, because the podcast is very light-hearted and very optimistic and positive. And I couldn't have done it in October and November because this has been very painful. And also I really must say, I know we have fun and laugh, but universities have been challenged. Universities around the world have been challenged about the way they deal with the way they deal with racism and the way they deal with political identities on campuses. And we've seen, this has been very, very challenging. I think it's the most challenging time for universities that I can remember. And actually French universities have fared relatively well. American universities have been in terrible crisis. And it really raises a big question about the role of universities and what a university culture is and the role that universities have in creating political and philosophical and intellectual environments. It's been fascinating, but it's been very, very tough. And so all our Israeli listeners and all our Palestinian listeners and all our Ukrainian listeners, anyone who's in a country that is being challenged by either by terrible regimes or by terrible, terrible terrorism or by terrible acts of racism or hatred or these terrible, terrible acts against women. I really hope that this year, the time of season three, will bring better environments in all these countries so that people can go back to trying to ask good scientific questions and trying to learn to live together. So it's been a very difficult time, and I really feel for listeners who are living in war zones wherever they are in the world. We live in France and we forget that, you know, we think everyone has all the luxuries that we have, and it's not the case. So that was a bit heavy, but I really have to say the podcast could not go out with me saying how affected I've been over the last few months and how much I feel for colleagues on both sides or on any side of any conflict, so that they can't just do science. And so I've really tried not to tweet politically for the last few months. But every time I've seen a scientist from anywhere in the Middle East talk about the science, I've just said, just keep doing the science. And it's really important. It's really important in the lab that the lab is not a political environment. The lab is a place where people come together to try and think and break new boundaries and work together. I think for the next generation of Israelis and Palestinians and Ukrainians, that science is an optimistic future to make the world a better place.
I can thank you for sharing this, and I can just agree. Just by saying again, I believe that science has no border. I believe actually science is a way just to unite every kind of people, their origin, their gender, whatever it is, because it's with this diversity that we can address all the diversity of question we have for the universe.
So you know, I often give like public lectures about genetics, and I say there are 3 billion nucleotides in the genome, and then the number of differences, genetic differences between you and me, between anyone, is a tiny, 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 tiny number. And I always say, what do we have to choose what we focus. Do we focus on the small things that make us different, or do we focus on the mass that makes us the same? So obviously for disease and for population genetics, we focus on the little differences because they help us understand disease and population genetics. But maybe for society, we should focus on how much we have in common. You know, everyone loves their kids. No one wants their kids to go to the army. everyone loves their parents and want their parents to live as long as possible. And everyone's interested in how the world works and trying to make it a better place. I think everyone, except a few terrible, terrible people who bent on destruction. So.
Yeah. And no, but I'm just listening because I really can just agree with what you say. And somehow I don't know. I don't want to put a function to this podcast, but if this podcast can just play its part in just trying to just make disappear those differences between people, because this is what we talk about. We talk about how to just do better science altogether.
I've been very moved by the breadth of the, you know, the people listening. We've touched in many countries. So mm-hmm.
I just want now to conclude by saying thank you for all the work you are doing, the commitment you put every time into it, and above all, for keep doing it just to help and encourage everybody in this field, something that should not be taken for granted. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Bye.
Bye, Clarissa. And thank you for all those questions. It was really fun to have you for this introduction episode. And if people want to find you, they can just go to Instagram, find our page called Lonely Pipette, and find your account directly linked to the bio. See you.
Just a word about season 3.
Yeah.
What do we have in store?
So we are going to publish every month. Just to please not kill ourselves.
Yeah, I think we did. We decided on a schedule, right?
We decided on schedule. This episode will. So it's going to be. It's easy to remember. Let's say it. It's every last.
It's the last Tuesday of every month.
Exactly.
The last Tuesday of every month, because that's the worst day in the month. Is the last Tuesday. We're gonna make the last Tuesday the fun. The best day of the month.
Yeah, let's do that. So if the Lonely Pipette can be the best podcast for the worst day of the month.
We always make sure that we have recorded before, because else we wouldn't be able to keep the momentum going. So we have at least 10 already lined up for season 3. But we haven't decided whether that's all or whether there'll be more. We've got lots of surprises. We're trying to step out of our comfort zone. We have some surprises for that we haven't done yet, but that we're going to do some off-site. So we think of some other formats. We've got young, old from around the world. And thank you for all the people who accept to come. And we have some people that we try to get for season 1. We try to get for season 2. And we haven't yet got for season 3. And we might try, we might finally get them for season 4, because there will be a season 4, right? I don't know. You can't stop. Now you're a creator, you just got to keep creating. We've got lots of surprises. It's been great making season 3. It's been great thinking about how to do things differently. People keep saying, when's it coming back? When's it come back? So we're back. And again, I keep saying to people, if you have ideas for things that you want to see or hear, please just write and let us know. Can people still buy us a coffee?
They can still buy us a coffee. And of course, even if we don't answer to everything, we read every comment, every suggestion. And maybe you will see that in season 3, there are some of your suggestions.
Yeah, and we're also going to try and use Instagram, thanks to Clarissa.
Yeah, thanks also to her for the question. It was a nice...
I feel sort of old because I'm still on LinkedIn and and X. But yeah, we're gonna be on Instagram. And again, at your university, if you invite us for a workshop.
It's been great making season 3. I'm really excited to see how it's going to be received. We haven't decided the order that we're releasing them.
No, so we are going to decide it soon.
that's going to be fun because, do we start with more famous, less famous, women, men, or younger, older? Anyway, we have a great great set of people for you. It's going to be as good or even better than season two, which was as good or even better than season one. And we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
And I've never felt more motivated to help scientists
do better science. A bientôt.
A bientôt. So that's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us at the Lonely Pipette.
We hope that you learned something new, that something resonated with your own experiences, or that you just enjoyed the science.
Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at Lonely Pipette, and please share it with your friends in the lab. If you want to join our community, you can subscribe to the Lonely Pipette mailing list or mail us by following the link available on our Twitter profile. You will receive the next episodes directly in your mailbox. How cool is that?
Stay tuned for the next show, and remember, you might feel like a lonely pipette, but it doesn't mean you're alone. Tips from the Lonely Pipette can help you to do better science.
A bientôt!
A bientôt!